Hierdie inset word aan jou gebring met die komplimente van Radio Kaapse Kansel 729 AM. Besoek ons gerus by www.capepulpit.co.za.
Welkom by die ABU-program Krag van die Bybel. Krag van die Woord van God. En ons luister gewoonlik in hierdie program, in die eerste deel na die Bible Project se potgooi waar daar 'n heerlike gesprek is wat 'n mens kan luister. Ons deel dit dan en dan reflekteer ons daarop, maar veral dan op die gedeelte, die woord wat ons nou in Matteus 6 daarna gaan kyk. Ja, miskien is dit goed om ook vandag net te deel. Ek weet nie of jy ook honger is nie, honger vir brood, die brood van die lewe, dors vir die lewe in Jesus. Miskien het jy nou al 'n bietjie brood geëet en jou dors geles vanmôre. Maar om persoonlik net te luister en in die teenwoordigheid van die Here te kom, kan ons genoeg daarvan kry. Ek weet nie, ek bly honger. En as ek, hoe verder ek wegdwaal met dagse take en werk en dinge waarmee ek besig is, hoe meer kom ek achter, maar as iets wat kort, ek is dors, tot ek weer net gaan luister. So baie welkom, as jy in jou dors en in jou hongerte, wat Jesus te sê, kom na my toe wie dors en honger is. En hy sê dit in die context van, kom eet my, drink van my. In ander woorde, hy bring dit vir ons. Die woord is kragtig. Met die gees wat God in ons gegee het, ons wat weergebore is in hom, en die gees ontvang het. Wanneer ons dan nou luister na die woord, dan getuig dit saam. Dan sê ek ja. Hier is die Here is hier. Die Here lewe. En dan word die donkerte uit my lewe verdryf. So hierdie program gaan oor hoe lees ek die Bybel en kan ek die krag van die Here ervaar, die lewende woord van God. Jy is ook baie welkom om dit Abu die program ook aanbied om na die webwerf, Abu se webwerf te gaan, www.abu.org.za, of jy kan Marietjie skakel by 084-501-1102. Jy kan ook direct Kaapse Kansel toe skakel. 021-180-5744 en direct met die berader in vertroue praat. Doen dit wanneer jy voel jy wil net met iemand praat en die wysheid van die Here deur sy woord en deur gebed belewe. Ek is Marius Skalekamp en dit is so 'n groot voorreg vir my om met elkeen te kan praat rondom dit wat die lig is vir ons pad, die woord van die Here. Ons gaan net nou 'n oomblik kyk en ek deel met julle net die opsommende waaroor dit nou gaan met die Bible Project se potgooi. En daarna luister ons na musiek en dan luister ons na die potgooi self. So dit gaan oor Matteus 6, die deel van die bergrede, van vers 24 tot 34. En vandag kyk die Bible Projects die gesprek dan, what does Jesus say about money? So dit is daar die gedeelte waar die Here sê, jy kan nie God en mammon dien nie. Ons gaan saam met hulle luister gesels rondom die Here wat hier 'n waarskuwing gee om nie geld tot God se posisie te verhoog nie. God te maak met ander woorde nie. Jesus gebruik die woord mammon. Dit waarin wat eintlik regtig beteken dit waarin jy die meeste vertrou. Wat gebeur wanneer jy geld die meeste vertrou? Wanneer dit net in jou hele gedagte wêreld en lewe voorop staan, dan is dit wat jy vertrou. Die afwesigheid daarvan of die oorvloed daarvan. Wat bedoel Jesus met onregverdige rykdom? Hoe lyk dit om vry te wees van die liefde of die vrees oor geld? Tim en John kyk na die gelykenis van die onregverdige bestuurder en hoe ons net een God kan aanbid. Bly ingeskakel, luister na musiek en dan kom die potgooi. En ons gesels daarna gaan ons reflekteer op dit alles. Bly ingeskakel.
This is Bible Project Podcast, and this year we're reading through the Sermon on the Mount. I'm John Collins, and with me is co-host Michelle Jones. Hi, Michelle.
Hi, John. So this is an uncut episode. You'll notice in your podcast feed is another version of this episode where we invite in a bigger community of Bible readers and explore today's topic from even more angles. If you want to listen to that, find it in your feed. But we also know that many of you have enjoyed just listening to long-form, uninterrupted dialogue. So if that's what you're after, then stick around for this hour.
Okay, today we continue in the section of teachings in the Sermon on the Mount where Jesus talks about money, or more generally, our stuff.
Now, the first teaching was all about storing up sky treasure, or as we began to say, sky stuff. If God's new creation is going to be full of abundance, then we can connect to it now by believing in that abundance, by living generously with our time and money. And when we do, we're storing up sky stuff.
In the second teaching, Jesus gives us a riddle about having a good eye or a bad eye.
The good eye is an eye that believes in God's abundance. If your eye is good, the light within you is radiant.
And that brings us to the third teaching on money.
This third teaching is short and memorable. No one is able to serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to one and despise the other. You are not able to serve God and wealth.
Or also translated, you can't serve God and mammon. And that word mammon is a little rabbit hole we'll go down. Here's Tim.
He puts mammon on the same level as God, serve either God or mammon. So this has made many people wonder, is mammon a proper name, like for a perceived God or deity? Or is he just personifying it creatively?
Wealth does have power. It lures us. It promises nice things for us, like pleasure and peace. It holds out the promise of power and prestige. But before you know it, you don't just have money. Your money has you. It owns you. But what if we could be free from the power of wealth?
And then there are other moments where you do let it go and act in some generous way. And paradoxically, there's a freedom that comes from that kind of decision. You realize like, oh man, my bank account doesn't have to own me and own my imagination for what's possible.
On today's episode, you can't serve God and mammon.
Thanks for joining us.
Here we go.
Hey, Tim.
Hey, John. Hi. Here we are talking about Sermon on the Mount.
Yeah. All right. So we're in this section of reading the Sermon on the Mount where Jesus is talking about relationships and money as it relates to being his follower, which means uniting heaven and earth with him and finding true life, which is a life connected to God and a life of loving others.
Yeah. What is more core to the human mind that motivates our behavior except our desire for security and for pleasure. And it just turns out that economic security through the form of wealth or money is just pretty much what most humans are thinking about most of the time. And so Jesus has a lot to say about the deepest sources of security and stability and desires for pleasure that we all have. Yeah. And that's why he talks about money so much. And so Jesus talks about treasures on the land and treasures with the sky. Then he talks about the eye metaphor that we talked about in the last conversation. And then now he's going to go with another binary that kind of maps back onto the treasures on land or sky, except in this saying, in the Sermon on the Mount, he calls it, you only have two things you can trust in in the world. There's really only two things. He calls it God and mammon, or God and wealth. It's just a short little saying about God and money that is very memorable. It's echoed through the centuries. Mm. And before we dissect the butterfly, we should just read it and just observe the butterfly and let it glisten in all of its beauty. And the saying is this. Notice it's in symmetrical, chiastic form. No one is able to serve two masters, because he will either hate the one and love the other, or he'll be devoted to the one and despise the other. You are not able to serve God and mammon.
Mammon.
Mammon, yeah.
Okay.
So it begins and ends with just this categorical assertion.
You can't serve two masters.
No one is able to serve two masters. You are not able to serve God and mammon, translated as wealth in many of our English translations. And then in the middle, he gives a reason. You're either going to hate the one or love the other, or to be devoted to the one and despise the other. It's a really strong binary contrast.
It is very binary. Mm-hmm. I have an allergy to things that are so binary.
Yeah. Yeah. Jesus did not.
Like, I want to press into this and be like, really?
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm reading a work by, an older work by a Jewish scholar, David Dauba, called The New Testament in Rabbinic Judaism. It was written in the 50s. But he's trying to show how the teachings of Jesus, many of the sayings of Jesus, the rhetorical form of how Jesus taught is so hand in glove with just how the rabbis of the first century taught, as we learn about them in Jewish literature called the Mishnah and the Talmud. And so he said one mistake that moderns often make is that these use of binary contrasts, either ors, we mistake it for non-nuanced thinking because it paints things in simplistic terms. Mm-hmm. But rather, the nuance often comes in putting lots of different teachings together that seem mutually exclusive. And you're like, wait, does he mean this or does he mean that? When you compare the two sayings. So here it's just very clear, like you can't serve God and money. But then he'll tell a parable about a guy who uses money in Luke chapter 16 of the unjust steward or the shrewd manager. But a guy uses money to form a bunch of relationships. And actually, we'll talk about it because it's the only other parable where Jesus uses the word mammon in all of his teachings. And so it's like, wait, so is this, you can't serve God and money, so sell everything and be a poor itinerant teacher like Jesus? Or should you be like the shrewd manager and use money and you can accumulate some wealth, but it's instrumental? Which one is it, Jesus? Sell everything, give to the poor, or accumulate and use strategically? But there, the nuance is comparing the two and to say, well, sometimes one, sometimes the other. And holding those two forces you to meditate and do the nuancing in between. Mm. And this is very typical of just Jewish rabbinic thought. You know, I was really grateful that I came across that insight because it's easy to think that these binaries are a sign of simplistic thinking, when it's more they had very nuanced thinking, they just communicated it differently than we would. Does that make sense as a coherent thought? Mm-hmm. I just read it recently, so I've been processing it.
Yeah, you come across a teaching which says something very matter-of-factly and plainly, and you think, oh, okay.
That's it.
This is it.
Yeah.
This is all I have to think about this subject.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
It's very clean.
That's right. I can't serve God and money. I guess I shouldn't have any money in my life, which is impossible.
But this happens in other ways too, where I think we've run into this before with other sayings of Jesus.
Oh, I've got another one.
Yeah.
In Luke, Jesus says, if you don't hate your father and mother, you can't be my disciple.
Right. Yeah. That's a heavy hitter.
Totally. But then he has a debate with some Bible nerds later on about the fifth commandment, honor your father and mother. And he talks about how these particular Bible nerds found ways to evade supporting your mom and your dad financially by giving those gifts to the temple. And he's like, it's so lame.
They found out a loophole.
They found a loophole. And you should honor your mom and dad. And that should supersede that your mom and dad have a higher value claim to your money in that scenario. So that's a good example. Wait, I'm supposed to hate my mom and my dad. No, you're supposed to honor your mom and your dad, Jesus says. And then you get Paul the Apostle, who quotes that commandment and says, children, you should honor your parents. So which one is it? I think the point is that, well, there might be situations where my allegiance to Jesus needs to override my allegiance to my family or my parents. But there are probably lots of other times where they're not in competition with each other. And my way of honoring Jesus is to honor my parents. And the point is the nuance in between them, it requires wisdom.
Yeah.
If you just quote one of them, you've misrepresented Jesus' teaching on the matter.
I think in particular here, when he says you can't serve two masters, I want to say, well, maybe I could. That sounds like a challenge. I could have two bosses. I could probably figure a way to like please two people that I report to.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
Well, I suppose until they have, what do you say? There's a conflict of interest. It's like, I need you to work extra long this weekend on this project. Do it. And the other employer's like, hey, I need you to work on this other project this weekend.
And eventually you're going to favor one. That's the point.
Yes. The point is of ultimate value and allegiance. Yeah.
At least
I think so.
Okay. So yeah, if you have two people you're reporting to in some way and are giving you instructions, at some point there's going to be enough conflict where you have to decide, who do I care about more?
Yeah. Which one will override the other?
And that might first start with just a bit of a preference, but eventually it's going to turn into what Jesus calls just loving one and hating the other.
Yeah.
It'll turn into despising one.
Mm-hmm.
I can kind of see how you get there.
Yeah.
At first it's kind of like, okay, I'm going to have to let down my one boss.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you do that enough times and pretty soon you're kind of like, man, I don't really like that boss anymore. It kind of bugs me. I'm beginning to despise this relationship.
I see. Well, we should, with love and hate and devotion and despising, we're in those extreme binaries again. And I don't think he necessarily means you have to hate the other, literally.
Mm.
But the first time love and hate is used in this way in the Hebrew Bible as a binary is in the Jacob story.
Oh, right.
He says he loved Rachel but hated Leah. Leah was hated.
Yeah.
And nobody thinks that means he actually like hated her guts.
Mm.
It's relative priority and it's using extreme, an extreme contrast.
Got it.
In comparison to one, actually you can imagine a rabbi saying this, in comparison to the one, it's as if he hates the other.
Enough times of letting down the one boss, it's not that you really hate them.
Yeah.
But like...
They might think that you hate them.
Yeah. But your posture towards them is such that it's easy to begin to feel like, man...
Yeah.
Despise isn't too far out of the way,
that's true.
You know?
That's right. I asked you to do this, and you're not going to do it? You must not care about me, right? So there are times, apparently, when following Jesus, as you express your devotion to the God of Israel, will involve using money in a way that is what, counter to sound financial wisdom or strategic use of wealth. Matthew has rendered this saying of Jesus into Greek, or the source that Matthew used. These are big debates in gospel scholarship. But Jesus, we know, spoke in Aramaic or Hebrew, and almost certainly both. And so the word translated as wealth here. In the old King James, they didn't translate it because Matthew didn't translate it into Greek. Matthew spells in Greek letters a Semitic word. It could be Hebrew or Aramaic. For mammon is the word. Mammon. So it's kind of a puzzle, like why Matthew didn't translate the word. He transliterates the word from Jesus' teachings, which is fascinating in and of itself.
Because that's mammon's an Aramaic word.
Mammon's a Semitic word,
okay,
that is found in both ancient Hebrew and Aramaic.
Okay.
And here's what's super interesting. Because he puts mammon on the same level as God, sort of either God or mammon.
Right.
So this has made many people wonder, is mammon a proper name, like for a perceived god or deity? Because you can't serve God and mammon, like rival deities. Or is he just personifying it creatively? So here's something interesting. This is a dictionary entry on mammon from a unique dictionary that I keep like finding so many insightful things from over the years. It's called the Dictionary of Deities and Demons in the Bible.
Oh, wow.
It's just a full...
Sounds like fun.
It's super interesting. If you've ever wondered about any angel, demon, God in the Bible, this is the place to go. It was made in the late 90s. Anyway.
This is your storehouse?
This is the storehouse of all knowledge, ancient knowledge about demons and deities. So anyway, P.W. von der Horst wrote the article on mammon. And what he notes is that this word mammon is most likely a noun form of the Semitic root amen or amen, which in both Aramaic and Hebrew is where we get our word amen, to affirm something as trustworthy. When you say amen, what you're saying is, I agree that that's a saying worthy of trust.
Okay.
So the noun mammon is most likely derived from amen, which you put a what we call the M on the front.
Okay.
That's often how you form nouns in Semitic languages, is to put the an M on the front, or mem. So ma'mon is where it comes from, and then it's shortened to mammon, meaning that the noun, the meaning of the noun is that in which you trust.
Oh.
Ma'mon, the thing in which you trust.
Okay.
Which is a pretty great description of money. The thing you trust in. So he goes on, he says, in Jesus' teaching, mammon is personified as some kind of superhuman power that stands in competition to God, and by possessing people can even keep them from being devoted to God and make them hate him. So people debate on whether Jesus is just personifying and speaking metaphorically, or if he really believes there is some kind of superhuman or spiritual force that uses mammon as a way to deceive humans. And you can make a strong case, then that's a great way of summarizing the way the Hebrew Bible talks about wealth.
As a power.
As a power that deceives humans into trusting in something that will lead them to death.
So there's probably a lot of different words you can use to describe money. But
I chose mammon here.
One word is mammon. How common is that?
It's not common. It appears only one other time in the sayings of Jesus.
How common is it in the Hebrew Bible?
Oh, it does not appear in the Hebrew Bible. Huh. It appears
very unique
Jewish
phrase.
Literature of the Second Temple period.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a good example. It doesn't come from the Hebrew Bible. It comes from the literature and thought world of Second Temple Judaism, which, you know, was full of nerds who reflected a lot on the Hebrew Bible.
And that's when this word got into circulation. And this word means the thing you trust in.
The thing you trust. Yeah.
And everyone knows, oh, you're talking about money.
Yeah.
When you use that word.
Yeah.
You're not talking about God. You're talking about wealth.
Yep.
Which also could be related to some sort of spiritual power. So in a way, you might be talking about a deity.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
Yeah, that's right.
But the deity of accumulating wealth.
Yeah. So the category of idolatry or spiritual beings here is actually similar. Like the biblical prophets often make fun of the actual idol statues that people bow down to. And they're like, you're bowing down to something that you made. But they also have a category that oftentimes...
Yeah, don't eat the meat that was
exactly
sacrificed there.
For Paul, says, listen, that statue in the temple, it's nothing. But that doesn't mean that there isn't a daimonion, a real spiritual being who's deceiving people and leading them to destruction by means of that physical thing. Mm-hmm. And this would be this same category here. Mm.
Cool. I think most people can intuitively go, oh, okay, yeah. Mm-hmm. Money can so capture my imagination and heart mm-hmm. and motivations mm-hmm. in which now that really is the thing I'm serving.
That's right. Yep.
Yeah. And I think we're often surprised at how quickly that sneaks up on us. I know I'm surprised.
Oh, yes.
I think I'm not doing it. Yeah. And all of a sudden, yep. I realize, oh, yep. I'm doing it.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So to address that, let's just quickly reflect on the parable.
Okay.
The other parable, the other use of Mammon in Jesus' teachings. It's not in Matthew. It's in the Gospel according to Luke. Chapter 16 of Luke, verse 1. So here's the parable, starts in Luke 16, verse 1. This is the Lexham English Bible translation. But John, why don't you read it?
Okay. And he, that is Jesus, said to the disciples, a certain man was rich who had a manager, and charges were brought to him that this person was squandering his possessions.
Bad manager.
Bad manager.
Yeah.
Okay.
Irresponsible manager. It's no good.
Yeah, yeah, squandering his money.
Mm-hmm.
So he, that is the rich man, summoned him, that is the manager, says to the manager, what's this I hear about you? Give the account of your management because you can no longer manage. And the manager said to himself, ooh, what should I do? Because my master is taking away this management role from me. I'm not strong enough to dig, and I'm ashamed to beg. What am I going to do? I know what I should do so that when I am removed from the management, they will welcome me into their homes. And he summoned each one of his own master's debtors and said to the first debtor, how much do you owe my master? And that debtor said, 100 measures of olive oil. And so the manager said to him, take your promissory note and sit down quickly, write down 50. And then he said to another, how much do you owe? And that guy said, 100 measures of wheat. He said, take your promissory note, write down 80. And the master praised the dishonest manager because he acted shrewdly.
Hmm. So
that's a little twist.
That's the parable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then he has a little saying.
He has a little takeaway. But just right there from the parable itself, you would think that the master would say,
what are you doing? I mean, okay, because here's the thing. It's
yeah.
like, you aren't managing my possessions well.
Yeah.
So you're done.
And now you just managed them worse.
He just managed them worse.
Totally.
He told everyone to like write down
yeah.
less of what they owed.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. This is a long-standing kind of issue in the interpretation of this parable, that little twist. Although Jesus' parables often end with a twist. Because mm-hmm. essentially what he's making the master do is now shift into the perspective that Jesus is going to take as he boils down the main idea of the story.
Mm.
It is interesting. You would think the master would be angry.
Well, what's interesting, at the beginning of the parable, we don't know why the master doesn't like his management style.
Yeah.
That he's, why?
He was literally scattering his possessions.
Oh, okay.
He was losing, wasn't making a profit.
Oh, so we do know.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he wasn't making a profit. Maybe because he does stuff like this all the time.
Yeah.
So yeah, for one reason or another, he wasn't increasing profit of his master's possessions. So he's being let go. What he does is he takes what he has been given by his master, and instead of trying to squeeze as much profit out of these final accounts, he uses it instrumentally for some greater or higher good. That is, to forge social bonds. And I think in the ancient context, but actually it's similar in business and in relationships. Right. When you do a favor for somebody, you're inviting a reciprocity for people to be more inclined to help you out when you need it. And that's for sure what he's doing.
As soon as he became detached from the job, once he realized, okay, I'm going to be let go. Mm-hmm. So what's the real value of this responsibility?
Yeah.
The true value here is to build relationships. Mm. And I think what's scandalizing about this parable is he does it in a way you would almost think is dishonest, you know, sketchy, because it's not his money to like write off.
Yeah, totally.
It's his master's money.
Yeah.
So that's weird.
Yeah.
Yep. But then the master says, nice work. That was really shrewd.
Yeah. Yeah. So maybe we need to, it's almost as if the way Jesus has told the parable makes it feel literally unrealistic.
Yeah.
But it is realistic in terms of the larger frame that Jesus has in mind.
Yeah.
Which is, we should read his interpretation now and then think of the context for Jesus. So I'll read his takeaway. So he says, this is verse 8, the master praises a dishonest manager because he had acted shrewdly. Just quick note, it's the Greek word phronemos. This is the Greek translation of the word used to describe the snake in the garden.
Mm. It's a wisdom word.
It's a wisdom word, yeah, which means you know how to see a situation, think of what's the most strategic way to get an advantage out of the situation.
Yeah.
And that can be a very good skill. Mm-hmm. You can also put that same skill to destructive ends. Anyway, it's just interesting because that's the word here. Mm-hmm. Jesus says, because the sons of this age are more phronemos, more shrewd, than the sons of light with regard to their own generation. And I tell you, make friends for yourselves by means of unrighteous mammon.
That's the word.
Mammon. He calls it unrighteous mammon. So that when it runs out, they will welcome you into eternal dwellings. The one who's faithful with little will also be faithful in much. The one who's dishonest in little will also be dishonest in much. If you have not been faithful with mammon, unrighteous mammon, who's going to entrust you with true wealth? And if you haven't been faithful with what belongs to somebody else, who's going to give anything to belong to you? No slave can serve two masters. Mm. He'll either hate the one or love the other. He'll be devoted to one or despise the other. You can't serve God and mammon.
And there it is again.
Mm-hmm.
The same teaching.
Yeah, this is a good example of how the same teaching appears in different settings. Here it's in a story he tells while he's on the road. In Matthew, it's on the Sermon on the Mount. So part of what makes the parable feel literally unrealistic is that he's told the parable with an eye towards his own teaching on wealth. So the idea of being faithful with something that doesn't belong to you. Mm-hmm. Is for sure that maps on to the fact that this is God is the giver of all good gifts and generosity. And so even what you think is yours actually doesn't belong to you. Mm. So while it's unlikely that a real master would praise a slave for doing this, this is exactly what God would praise his servants
for doing with his money.
For doing with his money.
Or his resources.
Yeah, which is not to treat it as an ultimate end, but as to treat it as an instrument to build relationships. And then he uses this dishonest guy as a positive lesson of how to treat wealth as just a mere instrument to some greater end. And then that's the lesson he draws from it.
Is this what he's talking about? So the dishonest manager is the sons of this age?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep. The sons of this age.
And so he's saying, look, someone who kind of gets the way, is shrewd about the way the world works right now, they'd pull this kind of move.
That's right. They know the money is actually just an instrument.
Yeah.
And what's most valuable is the networks of relationships and support and care that you build in. And that's actually what provides ultimate stability.
People who really get it right now get that money's not about the money.
Yeah, yeah.
They get it.
That's right.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
That's a higher level skill, in a way, to realize like, oh, this money's not about the money.
Money's not about the money. That's right.
Money's about the opportunities it gives, mm-hmm. the way I can leverage the money for mm-hmm. favors
yep.
and for equity.
Yeah.
And so really shrewd business people.
Mm-hmm.
Money's a tool.
Yeah. So what the mode Jesus is in, when you just read him in the Sermon on the Mount, and he's like, you know, your treasure's in the sky, seek first the kingdom of God, you know, where your treasure is, there your heart be also. You can't serve God and money. Mm-hmm. That makes you think, okay, well, I guess God knows all things and he's wise, and so I'll do that, as Jesus talks to me here. The argument for Jesus here is, but let's just take God out of the equation for a second. Even this most strategic people right now who have money know that the money's not about the money.
Mm.
So if that's so, how much more? It's a kind of, that's the shape of the argument here.
He calls it unrighteous wealth.
Yes. Yeah.
Tell me about that phrase.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah. Well, righteousness in the biblical tradition means doing right by others. In Jesus' day, the way to gain wealth was to play a dirty game for the most part. And that's part of the way the economy was just kind of set up back then. Of course, you had your honest fisherman or your furniture maker or something like that. But the way to really get ahead in their economy at that time was land ownership. And that was just a dirty game because it was occupied territory, occupied by the Roman Empire. So to engage in the game of real estate, it meant getting into the ranks of status and power, probably meant selling out all kinds of values you have as an Israelite to, you know, get friendly with the right people who were buying up all of the land of Israel. And it was an Irish New Testament scholar, Sean Frain, his book on Jesus many years ago, that I learned so much about first century economy up in Galilee, a little book called Jesus, a Jewish Galilean. But he just talked about how, the parables that Jesus tells about a landowner but going on a long trip. And he said he's alluding to a real common practice, which was like rich Romans would come from Italy and buy up land in occupied territories and then just lease it or loan it out and have managers run it.
Hmm.
And so it's kind of like the way Airbnbs function in vacation towns now,
sure.
Where it's like there's one or two people who actually live there now,
yeah.
But all the rest of the houses are owned by people who live in California or something.
Right.
And it was like that.
Mm.
And so this was a very common setup. And so just the way the relationships and economy worked usually meant bribes, usually meant selling out, going to someone's house, not eating kosher so you can get on their good side, so you can,
like, interesting.
Unrighteous mammon. So Jesus is just suspicious.
Yes.
Now, what he's suspicious of is an economic setup that had a context. So does that mean that it's impossible
right.
that there could ever be a righteous mammon?
honest ways to make money.
Yeah, totally. And I, you know, just Jesus didn't grow up in that setting, so he didn't.
Got it.
That wasn't on the table.
Right. I think we could all empathize with, as much as governments and policies try to make it easier or make it more likely that you can make money in honest ways.
Mm.
I mean, like buying and selling houses, for example, there's a lot of logistics. You've got the lenders, you've got the realtors, you've got the person in the middle, the escrow account.
Oh, yeah.
And all that's set up
so
you don't take advantage of each other.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
And so we put in all these policies and rules to try to do that. But I think we could all empathize with, no matter how much we do that, like, there's going to be ways for people to make money by being dishonest.
Taking advantage of each other.
Yeah.
And it's almost like the nature of money is that, because what's at stake is desire and security for humans, it just draws us in to redefine good and bad in our own eyes. And then all of a sudden we're making decisions based on those motivations that we wouldn't normally make. And that seems to be a pretty universal human experience when it comes to economic exchange. And so Jesus just puts it as stark as it could possibly be. You can only have one ultimate allegiance, and it's got to be God or mammon, money in which you put your trust.
When Jesus says true wealth in that parable, is that that's the sky treasure?
Oh, with true, yeah, true wealth. If you haven't been faithful with unrighteous mammon, who will entrust you? Yeah, with the true. Oh, interesting. It doesn't actually have the word riches. It just says if, in Greek it says, if you have not been faithful with unrighteous mammon, who will trust you with the true? It's just the word the true.
The true.
So yeah, that would be equivalent to sky treasure.
The sky treasure.
To stored up things in the sky. Yep. And maybe, you know, there we're using an Eden image of being entrusted with oversight and responsibility in Eden and setting that on analogy to God's images being his representatives having oversight of the new creation. And the idea of management and, you know, oversight. What that metaphor means literally, well, Jesus never really says. Probably wisely so. Yeah, wait and see. But yeah, maybe just to close this reflection, I think we both know. Well, I think anybody knows. We all probably have our own versions of a moment where it was either going to be a decision to give up something financially in the name of seeking another's well-being. And we just have a deep sense that's what it means to be faithful to Jesus right now. And it's really a struggle to do that because you're letting go of mammon, the thing in which you trust. And then there are other moments where you do let it go and act in some generous way. And paradoxically, there's a freedom that comes from that kind of decision. And you realize like, oh man, like this, my bank account doesn't have to own me and own my imagination for what's possible. And, you know, those kinds of decisions happen in big and small ways in my experience. And I feel like it's that dynamic tension that Jesus is just putting on extreme, putting in an extreme way here.
One reflection I'm having is when you think about what does it mean to serve God versus mammon? And then you go to the parable, and the illustration Jesus gives is to think of yourself as a manager.
And of someone else's wealth.
Of someone else's wealth.
Or resources.
Resources. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So one, it's this sense of a little bit detachment, like this actually isn't mine. I'm managing this.
Yeah.
That's a common theme in Jesus' teaching.
Yep. It's a common theme in the Hebrew Bible too. Yeah.
And I mean, that's a lifetime to reorient yourself to.
Yes. Yeah, that's right.
But then there's, okay, whose resources are these? And if they're God's, what does he want me to do with them? And what's really just puzzling and wonderful about the parable is that God wants us to be aggressively generous with his money.
Oh, that's good.
Right?
Yeah.
To do with it what a real owner of wealth would never want you to do.
Yeah, and maybe that's probably the twist at the end to say the master praised the manager.
Yeah.
Which is true in
God's economy.
God's economy.
Yeah, that's true in God's economy.
Yeah.
And this is the point that Jesus is making, going, the children of, what do you call them, light? The
children of, sons of light.
Sons of light.
Yeah.
Compared to people who are like caught up in just the economy of today. Those whose imaginations are captured by the economy of new creation. They realize the person who really owns all of this actually wants me
to give it away.
To just be generous, to write off debts, to go for broke.
Yeah, well said. Pun intended, apparently. Yeah, it's really challenging. It's also a brilliantly told parable, the way it shades between the story world and then Jesus's invitation to see the real world. So this closes down the third saying about wealth. Jesus has four sayings in this section. He began by contrasting land treasure and sky treasure. Then he has two short parables, the parable about the eye, good eye and the bad eye, then this parable about God and Mammon, his two masters, and then he's going to close it out with a long teaching about wealth and worry, about anxiety. And you can see he's just turning wealth over, money over from all these angles. And when you put all of them together, the two parables and then these things about sky and land treasure on the outer ends, you get a deeper insight into wealth than you would if you didn't have all of the sayings. So next we'll explore wealth and anxiety.
Okay.
Money wants to be a master that we serve, but God is king. And if everything ultimately belongs to him, then money is actually a tool that we get to be extravagantly generous with.
Yes, and I love the parable of the shrewd manager, how this manager is just recklessly generous with the owner's money. And I love the idea of living that way. But if I'm honest, I'm kind of wrestling with taking care of people I know could probably pay me back. I think the God of the Bible wants me to prioritize relationships with people who will have no way of paying me back.
Right. And strangely, in God's economy, that is a strategic investment. And the real payoff doesn't get revealed until heaven and earth become one. And maybe that's why it's called Sky Treasure.
Yes. I will understand this one day, Sky Treasure. Okay. We got one more episode on Jesus and Money.
Yes, it's a long poetic reflection on a way of life unencumbered by worry.
There's a reciprocity to the kingdom of God based in a sense of abundance. There is a freedom. There's a peace if you really trust that God will provide.
Bible Project is a nonprofit. We exist to experience the Bible as a unified story that leads to Jesus.
Everything we make is free because of the generous support of thousands of people just like you.
Thank you for being a part of this with us.
Hi there. I'm Luisa, coming to you all the way from Brazil.
I work as a producer on the nationalization of Bible Project episodes.
Hi, this is Tymoteusz, and I'm from Poland. I'm coordinator and leader of our Polish team. My favorite aspect of the work I do with Bible Project is seeing the fruits, like simply reading comments from our Polish audience.
One of the things I love most about my job at Bible Project is how we get to break down language barriers and convey important lessons through animation.
We believe the Bible is a unified story that leads to Jesus.
Bible Project is a crowdfunded nonprofit.
Everything we make is free because of your generous support.
Thank you so much for being part of this with us.
Hi, this is Tyler, here to read the credits. John Collins is the creative producer for today's show. Production of today's episode is by producer Lindsay Ponder, managing producer Cooper Peltz, producer Colin Wilson, Stephanie Tam is our consultant and editor, Tyler Bailey is our supervising engineer, Frank Garza and Aaron Olson edited today's episode. Aaron Olson also provided the sound design and mix for today's episode. Nina Simone does our show notes, and Hannah Wu provides the annotations for our app. Original Sermon on the Mount music by Richie Cohen, and the Bible Project theme song is by Tense. Tim Mackey is our lead scholar, and your hosts, John Collins and Michelle Jones.
Jy is ingeskakel by die ABO-program Krag van die Woord. Een mens luister so baie op verskillende maniere na die woord. Maar weet jy, liewe luisteraars, wanneer een mens die selfde gedeelte oor en oor lees, maar met verskillende vertalings, en een mens mediteer net oor dit wat in daardie gedeelte na jou toe kom, en jy doen dit oor en oor, dan is het vir my of ek helderder Jesus hoor, waar hy hier teen die berg staan, en die mense sit hier rondom hom, en hy staan miskien, maar luister aandagtig na hom wat met soveel gesag praat, wat soveel liefde in hom het, en wat het deel, ja nie net nie net met hulle praat nie, maar ook die brood en die visse vermeerder en wat hulle kan eet, hulle versorg. En dan, wanneer die mens hierdie woorde van Jezus lees, dan hoor, jy sit self aan sy voete. Sit hier, om net, ja, laat al die dinge van die wereld net gaan, al die dinge wat jou bekom, al die dinge wat in jou leven is nou, en sit net stil. En luister net weer, ek gaan weer hierdie gedeelte lees, ek wil hierdie hele gedeelte van vers 19 lees, jy kan, want dit is alles so amazing, is seker die woord, wonderlik in mekaar gesit, die Here praat hier in raaisels, en in poesie, hy praat so dat jy uiteindelik nie anders kan ons om te besef, maar hier is een boodskap vir my. En ek gaan dit sommer nou deel. Dis wat ek hoor. As jy hoor, dan sê jy miskien ook ander dinge hoor, want daar is soveel wat ek gee. Maar die boodskap wat ek hoor is net ek wat die Here is, sê die Here. Aanbid jy my? Het jy na my gedraai? Luister jy na my woorde? Is jy bewus van my teenwoordigheid? Of is daar al hierdie dinge wat jou wegtrek daarvan? Kyk jy met een kyk, met een hart. Ja, kom ons kom stil en ons luister. Heere, ek begin lees hier vir ons in Matteus 6 van vers 19, die Bybelgenootskap se 2020 vertaling. Moenie vir julle skatte op aarde by mekaar maak, nie, daar waar mot en roes verniel en waar diewe inbreek en steel. Maar maak vir julle skatte in die hemel by mekaar. Daar waar mot en roes nie verniel nie en waar diewe nie inbreek en steel nie. Want waar jou skat is, daar sal jou hart wees. Die oog is die lamp van die liggaam. As jou oog suiwer is, sal jou hele liggaam verlig wees. Maar as jou oog boos is, sal jou hele liggaam donker wees. As die lig in jou donker is, hoe groot is die duisternis nie? Niemand kan twee baase dien nie. Want hy sal of die ene haat of die ander een lief hê, of hy sal aan een loyaal wees en die ander een verag. Julle kan nie God en Mammon dien nie. Daarom sê ek vir julle, moet julle nie bekommer oor julle lewe, oor wat julle sal eet of wat julle sal drink of oor julle liggaam wat julle sal aantrek nie. Is die lewe dan nie belangriker as die kos en die liggaam as die klere nie? Let op die voels van die hemel. Hulle saai nie, hulle maai nie, hulle versamel niks en skure nie. Toch sorg julle hemelse Vader vir hulle. Is julle nie meer werd as hulle nie? Wie van julle kan deur hom te bekommer een el by sy lewe voeg? Waarom is julle ook klere bekommerd? Let op die wilde narsings, hoe hulle groei. Hulle soeg nie, hulle spin nie, maar ek sê vir julle, selfs Salomo en al sy pracht was nie soos een van hulle geklee nie. As God die gras van die veld wat vandag daar staan en môre in die oond gegooi word, so klee, hoeveel te meer nie vir julle nie, klein gelovig is. Moet julle daarom nie bekommer en vra, wat sal ons eet, of wat sal ons drink, of wat sal ons aantrek nie? Dit is immers alles dinge waarna die heidenasies soek. Julle hemelse Vader weet toch wat julle alles nodig het. Maar soek eers die koninkryk van God en sy geregtigheid. En al hierdie dinge sal vir julle bygevoeg word. Moet julle dus nie bekommer oor die dag van môre nie. Want môre sal oor homself bekommerd wees. Elke dag het genoeg aan sy eie kwaad. Ek is seker dat toe julle nou saam met my geluister hierna, dat jy hoor, dis een boodskap wat die Here gee. Ja, ons breek het op om dit verteerbaar te maak, dat ons nie iets van die rykdom van dit wat die Here met ons deel verloor nie, maar ons kan in elk geval, dit sal ons 'n leeftyd vat om werkelijk die volheid van dit alles te kan verstaan. Nou, vanmôre, vandag, kyk ons net eintlik dis na hierdie woorde van die Here, dat waar hy sê, jy kan nie mammon en God dien nie. Jy kan nie twee baase dien nie. Of die een sê haat en die ander een lief hê, of hy sal aan die een loyaal wees en die ander een verag. Jy kan nie God en mammon dien nie. Maar wanneer jy die hele gedeelte lees, hoor jy die Here een boodskap. Verlede week het ons gekyk na die oog wat 'n lamp venster is vir die liggaam, en dat jou oog met een kyk, een singular, sê die Engels eintlik van die woord wat hier gebruik word, een visie kyk, nie twee nie, nie dubbel kyk nie. Ons het gewys na die Griekse woord haplos, wat in Engels vertaal kan word met singular, een visie, wat die teenoorgestelde is van duplos, om met 'n dubbel visie te kyk. Haplos kan ook hier beteken in hierdie gedeelte en elders ook, wat eintlik my mooi die woord, die Engelse woord generosity, wholeness, vrygewigheid, heelheid, wat die teenoorgestelde is van om jaloers te wees op 'n stukkie van dit wat God gemaak het of wat ander het. Jy kan ook sê greed, met dat die mens gevul is hier, om, want jy kyk met een oog, jy sien net hierdie ding raak wat jy dink jy nodig het en nie sonder kan lewe nie. Dit is, jou lewe is afhanklik hiervan, om met een visie te kyk en dit raak te sien, om gevul te wees jou hart met die Gees. Dit is hierdie volheid. Jakobus, wat baie uit die bergrede uit praat, wanneer hy sy brief skryf aan die gelowiges, wat in verskillende situasies is, ryk en arm, en wat swaar het in die wêreld waarin hulle geleef het, skryf hy juist ook aan hulle, dan skryf hy, wanneer al hierdie moeilike tye in julle lewe kom, dan moet julle volhard, want die Here help jou om in daai situasie die egtheid van jou geloof te belewe, van jou verhouding met hom, van sy lewe wat hy vir jou gegee het, dit word werklikheid. Dat jou lewe dan word soos Jesus se lewe. Vol van liefde, vol van geregtigheid, die regte lewe, soos wat God het oorspronklik bedoel het. En so word jy, en so ontvang jy nou hierdie lewe. Hierdie heelheid, hierdie nuwe identiteit in die Here. En dan is daar vryheid, daar's vrygewigheid, daar's volheid. Da's nie gulsigheid nie. So hierdie haplos, hierdie een kyk, hierdie suiwer oog, sê eintlik, dis 'n oog wat oorvloed uitstraal. Nie net wanneer jy baie geld het nie, in alle omstandighede. Dis moontlik. Ek onthou so 'n keer, dit ek met baie mense wat belangrik en welgesteld was, gesels het hieroor, en dat hulle sê, maar dis nie moontlik nie. dis nie moontlik dat jy met vreugde, met volheid, met suiwerheid, net kan gee, net kan die Here vertrou. Maar die Here Jesus sê, dis moontlik, en ek glo hom liewers. Wat straal uit jou oë uit? Waar is jou hart? Is jou hart in die lewe wat die Here vir jou gegee het deur sy gees? Of is jou hart daai goed wat jy wil hê? Ja, ek het self intieme kennis daarvan om oorvloed te hê, maar ook om baie min te hê, baie, baie min. Is dit moontlik om in alle omstandighede in die teenwoordigheid van die Here te bly en vrede in jou hart te hê? Selfs hierdie week ook met een vriendin wat saam pad loop rondom om te luister na die woord en om te verstaan hoe kan ons ander help. En sy ervaar klomp dinge, groot druk en ook gesondheidsprobleme. En dan sê sy, maar hier binnen het ek vrede. Vrede. Nou, lieve luisteraar, as jy dit nie glo nie, sal jy dit nie belewe nie. Want geloof is om dit te kan ontvang, dit wat die Here gee. Maar hy is so geduldig met ons. En daarom, in hierdie verse, illustreer hy hierdie, om in die Here te wees, en met een hart te lewe. Ek hou so van die woord, die Engelse woord, singular, enkelvoudig te lewe in die teenwoordigheid van die Here. Hierdie een visie, hierdie heel kyk wat uit jou oë straal. En dan kyk hy nou en bring hy ons aandag terug hier na geld, na mammon. Jy kan nie mammon beteken eintlik dit wat jy die meeste vertrou. Maar mense het dit verstaan as geld. Die meeste vertrou. Jy kan nie dat mammon jou beheer en dan ook wil hê dat jy in die beheer van die gees staan nie. Lewe nie. Die Here vertrou en dan bid nie. Die heelheid, die lig wat uit jou oog straal, wat eintlik sê dat jy net een Here aanbid, dit is moontlik. Want Jesus praat hier met mense wat hier rondom hom sit en luister. Wat nie oorvloed het nie. Ja, daar was sekerlik die wat oorvloed ook het tussen hulle. Maar die meeste van daai mense het nie oorvloed nie. Hulle het swaar. So, ons moet, wanneer ons oor mammon gesels, moet ons ook dink nie dit aan die wat ryk is en baljaar in die rykdom en oënskynlik lyk of daar nie bekommernis is, wat nie waar is nie. Of mense wat genoeg het en baie dinge kan bekostig nie. Nee, ons moet hier ook dink aan die gebrek van geld. Hoe weet jy wanneer die gebrek aan geld, aan mammon, oor jou heers? En dan sê Jesus dit. Nie net die gebrekkie, maar ook die oorvloed, wanneer jy gestres en bekommerd is oor die geld wat jy nie het nie, of wat jy besorg is, wat jy kan verloor. Jesus praat in hierdie volgende verse daaroor, oor hierdie bekommernis, hierdie stres, oor die gebrek aan geld. Wie heers dan jou hart? Is dit die Here? Maar waar die Here is, is daar vrede, is daar goedheid, is daar liefde, is daar geduld, is daar lewe. Maar wanneer daar hierdie oorheersende magtige besorgdheid en kommer is in jou, dan hier diep in jou, denk jy, maar jy is eintlik alleen, jy is verlore. Dan kyk net hierdie oorheersende gebrek wat jy ly. Brood en klere, besorgdheid daaroor. Maar dan, dit is Jesus, hierdie Here van ons aan wie ons behoort, wie sy lewe ons ontvang het deur sy gees. Dit is hy wat ons geleer het om te bid tot ons hemelse Vader. Onse Vader, gee ons vandag ons daaglikse brood. En voor ons nou bietjie luister na musiek, dink oor hierdie vraag. Kan jy leer om net in vandag te lewe en om te vertrou? Bly ingeskakel. Jy is ingeskakel by die ABO-program Krag van die Woord. Ons dink verder oor hierdie woorde van Jesus. Kan jy God en Mammon dien? Hy sê nee, jy kan nie. Jy kan net een dien. Jy kan nie die donkerte in jou hart, wanneer die bekommernis en al hierdie dinge jou neerdruk, en eintlik soos wat die Here die gelykenis van die saad met ons deel, waar hy sê wat die saad in hierdie grond val en dan groei hier die dorings en die distels en dan sê hy, maar hierdie dorings en distels is dan die bekommernisse oor die lewe, wat dan die groei terughou, verstik, sodat jy die plant, die boom nie kan groei nie. Jy kan nie met donkerte in jou hart, wat uit jou oë uitstraal, wanneer alles op jou gerig is, jou nood, jou bekommernis, dit wat ander aan jou doen, die gebrek aan die middele wat jy so nodig het. Jy kan nie met daai donkerte, en hier in hierdie gedeelte sê, word hy ook vertaal, die bose oog, die donkerte wat uit jou oog straal, wat ook verstaan kan word as suinigheid, selfgerigtheid, leef, en dan ook sê, maar ek leef as kind van die Here, uit sy geregtigheid nie. En hier moet ons nou mooi dit uit mekaar uithaal. Wat ek met die deel hier is nie, wat die Here sê, maar jy is nie sy kind nie. Maar jy leef nie as sy kind nie. Jy kan nie op twee maniere gelyktydig leef nie. Of jy leef uit die gees, waar daar lewe kom in lig en enkelvoudigheid gerig op die koninkryk van God en sy geregtigheid. Of jy leef in daai oomblik, in daai tyd, met donkerte in jou hart, met hierdie bekommernisse, hierdie gerigtheid oor dit wat jy moet hê en nie het nie. Jy kan dit op 'n bepaalde moment een van hierdie twee wees. En die Here sê, jy kom na my, druk draai na my, aanbid my, die Here, die God. Ja, die kontrast wat die Here hier in hierdie verse stel, is wys duidelik dit, dat is hemel teenoor aarde, is lig teenoor donkerte, God teenoor geld. Jy kan nie al twee dien nie. Jy kan nie al twee wees nie, jy kan net een wees. Een aanbid, net lig wees, net hemel wees. En dis die tragiese werklikheid van ons lewe, dat juist ons as kinders van die Here kan so oorweldig word deur hierdie dorings en dissels wat rondom ons groei, die gebrek aan dinge in die donkerte, dat ons verstik, dat ons geloof ons verlaat. En in daai oomblik leef ek soos die heidenmense, sê Jesus in hierdie verse. Want hulle word verstik deur oorvloed of gebrek. En dit beheer dan heeltemal hulle lewe. Maar ons kom ook daar. Maar ons het 'n genadige Here wat geduldig is. En dit is wat hy met ons doen deur ons lewenspad. Om ons te leer om meer en meer net met ons oog op hom gerig te wees. Soos Hebreërs sê, om met jou oog op hom wat die wedloop hardloop en voltooi het te lewe. Om hom te volg. Navolgers van hom te wees. Die Heer het dit gesê vir ons, hy het in die Ou Testament totaal gesê vir Israel, vir ons, sê hy vir ons in Deuteronomium 6 vers 4, hy sê, luister Israel, die Heere, ons God, is die enigste Heere. Jy moet die Heere jou God lief hê met jou hele hart, met jou hele siel, met al jou krag. Hoor julle wat die Here hier sê, is precies dit wat in die Ou Testament gesê. Lewe met enkelvoudige gerigtheid op hom. Hoe jy lewe en dit wat jou oorheers, dit sal vir jou wys waar is jou hart. En as jou hart nie by hom is, is daar nie daai vrede is nie, ja die swaar, die pyn is daar, maar die pyn wat hy gedra het is dieper as my pyn en dan lig hy my op, want hy sê ek het jou vasgeneem in my hande en ek hou jou vas, jy behoort aan my, leef gerig op my. Jesus sê, kyk na jou lewe en weet waar is jou hart, en as jou hart nie op die regte plek is, draai na hom. Dit is wat hy waarmee hy begin het in die bergrede toe hy gesê het, salig is die wat arm van gees is, met ander woorde die wat afhanklik van God is. Hulle het dit nie, Here, ek het dit nie. Hierdie druk op my, hierdie bekommernisse oorweldig my. Maar ek is die kind. Ek is afhanklik van u. Here, wil u my neem. En my deur hierdie lei dat ek lig sal uitstraal uit my oë. Dat ek vol van u sal wees. Waar jou skat is, sal jou hart wees. En wat in jou hart is, wys hoe jy optree, wat jy sê en wat jy doen. Jy kan nie gulsig wees en committed wees aan die Here nie. Al twee is nie moontlik nie. Of die een of die ander. So, draai na hom. Word vervul deur hom. Jy kan niks nie. Nie geld, nie kos, nie klere, nie gesond, nie verhoudings. In jou laat oorheers. En dan sê, maar ek is gerig op die Here. Jy kan net enkelvoudig op die Here gerig wees. Of op iets anders. God self gerig wees. Op God self of op jou self. Geld of op God. Die stryd rondom jou gesondheid en die bekommernis, of jy kan in hom vrede vind. Jou besittings jou oorheers, of hy, deur sy gees wat hy aan jou gegee het, jou heers. Jou verhouding met jou vrou of jou man kan jou oorheers, of hy. Jou kinders kan aan sy plek kom. Dit kan nooit enig iets wat hy geskaap het, kan belangriker as hy wees nie. En waar hy is, is die waarheid, is die lewe, is die lig. En dan is daar enkelvoudigheid van 'n lewe wat op hom vertrou. Ons is vol enkelvoudige mense wat net een Here kan dien. Heel mense wat die Here se lewe ontvang het, die Heilige Gees ontvang het, en soos Psalm 73 vers 25, dit so duidelik sê, buiten u begeer ek niks in die hemel op aarde nie. om Here, maar behalwe vir geld wat ek so nodig het, vertrou ek op niks anders nie. Behalwe vir my kinders vertrou ek niks op. Nee. Here sê, buiten U begeer ek niks in hemel en op aarde nie. Kom ons luister nou na musiek en dan sluit ons gesprek ook af. En met die laaste paar gedagtes wat ons met mekaar deel. Bly ingeskakel. Jy is ingeskakel met die Elboekprogram Krag van die Woord. En die woord wat aan ons toe kom hier, is of die Here of mama. Jy kan nie al twee hier nie. Maar hy het begin om met ons te praat, vir ons te sê, salig is jy. Jy afhankelijk is van my. Salig is jy dors en honger is. Want jy sal versadig word. Jy sal die koninkryk van God sien. Jy sal God sien. En so is ons, as kinders van die Here, vervul deur die Gees, vol mense. Ons is enkelvoudige mense. Heel mense, wat die Here se lewe ontvang het. Wat die Heilige Gees ontvang het. Wat kan sê, buiten U, Here, begeer ek niks in hemel en aarde nie. Jy, ons kan binnen hy plek uitkom. In die midde van wat er omstandighede ook al. Psalm 73 vers 25 se woorde. Buiten U, begeer ek niks in hemel en aarde nie. Kom sê dit saam. Daar waar jy is. Buiten U. Begeer ek niks in hemel en aarde nie. En dan, wanneer ons begin hier die diepte van die Here se woorde inneem en deel van ons maak, en ons sien, ons kan enkelvoudig lewe afhanklik van Hom. Dan is die woorde van Paulus in 1 Korintiërs 7 vers 29 tot 32, al is het baie radikaal, maar dan verstaan ons dit. Paulus se woorde, om bly of hartseer te wees, of dinge te kan aankoop, mag in die pad staan van die Here se werk nie. Nie om bly of hartseer te wees, of dinge te kan aankoop, mag nie in die pad van die Here se werk staan nie. Die wat gebruik maak van die dinge van hierdie wêreld, moet nie daarin geheg raak nie. Want hierdie bedeling gaan verby. Ek wil hê dat julle in alles wat julle doen, vry moet wees van die kwellinge van hierdie lewe. Is dit nie wonderlik nie? Want as hierdie woorde van Paulus lees, dan weet ons, hy neem dit direk van sy Here. Hy het dit direct van hom gekry. Jy kan nie, ja, ons maak gebruik van die dinge van hierdie wêreld. Maar ons raak nie geheg daaraan nie. Hoe dikwels hoor ek dit nie? Dit is wat ek wil hê. Of ek kan nie sonder hierdie, ons is so geheg aan die dinge. Soos mense baie dik wil sê, soos geheg aan die dinge wat die Here gee, en nie aan die Here nie. Hy sê, kom my kind, jy is myne, jy behoort aan my, en niks sal jou van my liefde skei nie. So ons kan met een heldere oog, lig, een visie, een hart, wat gevul is deur Jesus se lewe, sy volmaakte lewe wat het my gegee het, en sy Gees wat in my leef, en wat my nou leer, en dit is waar oor die lewe gaan, dat ons meer soos hy sal word. Hy leer ons. Dit is waar oor het gaan. Om enkelvoudig te lewe, soos hy. Ek het gekom om die wil van my Vader te doen. En dit is wat hy gedoen het. Hy leer ons. Laat U naam, onse Vader, laat U naam geheilig word. U koninkryk kom. U wil geskied soos in die hemel, so ook op die aarde. Net in hierdie verse, net ook in die verse wat ons gedeel het, Matteus 6, in die middel van Matteus 6, staan die onse Vader. Waar ons leer? Gee ons vandag ons dagelikse brood. En ja, die druk is daar. Die bose is in die wêreld, ja. Dit is soms bitterlik swaar. Maar dan leer hy ons. Laat hierdie toets, Here, verbygaan, hierdie versoeking, hierdie toets. Bewaar my van die bose. Hoor julle die bose oog, die donkerte? Die bose wat wil vernietig, die bose wat wil chaos bring, die bose wat wil hê dat ek in die dissels en die dorings verstik. Ja, kom. Kom ons heilig. Wees by hom, hy wat jou nooi voor deel en laat jy groei uit die wingerd. Jy is die lood met nuwe krag. So volgende week kyk ons nou baie meer direk ook dan na die bekommernisse en die stresse en die worry wat kom van dubbel visie, dubbel hart en hoe kan ons vrykom om te lewe. Ons kan dit sekerlik nooit uitput nie en bly dit lees. Lees dit oor en oor, moenie dink, ach, maak jy dit nou gelees, lees oor en oor en bedink dit, reflekteer hierop, wat sê die Here hier? Wat sê dit van hom? Wie is hy? Wat sê dit van my? Mag die Here jou seën. Ons kom volgende keer weer saam. Tot ziens.
Hierdie inset was aan jou gebring met die komplimente van Radio Kaapse Kansel 729 AM. Besoek ons gerus by www.capepulpit.co.za.